Maybe it's a question I should know the answer to, but I'm not exactly sure that I do. I had to think about this a lot this week. What exactly are we supposed to do on Ash Wednesday? I mean, what exactly are you doing here? Why are you here and not someplace else? Why are you in this location and not down at the corner store? It's a cold night in early March, and you've dragged yourself along to worship, perhaps enthusiastically, perhaps not. But our neighbors are either they're asleep, or they're at home watching television, or they're washing up after supper, or arguing with their children over homework, or whatever it is that they're doing. What makes us, as Christians, different? Why are we doing what we do tonight? And many years ago, I thought, when I was smarter, right? Many years ago, I thought that I had this all figured out. I thought the problem with the Christian church was all this ashes and dust and stuff, and that the church just needed a better marketing campaign, that the church just needed to emphasize exciting things, that Christianity very often seemed like a downer, it was sad, and as a 21-year-old, a 22-year-old, the last thing I wanted to think about was dust and death and things like that. When you're that age, you're going to live forever, right? And you don't have any aches and pains that remind you of how the age is catching up with you. And I wanted to hear sermons about human possibility. I wanted the pastor to motivate me. That's what I wanted on Ash Wednesday. I wanted someone to preach a positive message and not a negative message. And I said many really intelligent things like, when I get into the church, I will. Because I knew I was going into the ministry. When I get into the church, I will. And I don't know what I thought I would do, what sort of revolution of positive thinking I would transform Ash Wednesday into. But I've noticed in the 17 or so years that I've been doing this, when you look at the Bible, when you look at the texts for Ash Wednesday, there's not a lot of good human possibility there. There's not a lot of positive thinking. I was conceived in sin in my mother's womb. I mean, you can't get any worse off than that. You can't get a worse start than from your mother's womb. You can't go any further back than that and say, well, things were better the day before I was conceived, right? Things were a lot better for me back then. And there are stories in the Bible that we look at on Ash Wednesday that remind us that we're not to rely on human potential and power and possibility. And that I've learned that there's value in dust and in Lent. Any trip to the beach on vacation involves at least once getting that grit of sand in your eye. Camping in the woods always means traipsing dirt into the tent and having to tap the dust out of your boot treads. And so it is with our lives. They're messy. Maybe we think we've got it figured out. Not overall. They're not messy in a disaster sort of way. But in the details, the dirt and grime gets in our lives. Our lives are not as much under control as we want to think or we want to project to the outside world. And for too many people, including myself 17 years ago, Lent was about doing things better. And I know I've preached sermons on it, and you've certainly heard sermons about it, where Lent is just a time to double down and try harder. You're to give up more stuff for Lent. We're going to journey with Jesus this year. We're going to dig really deep into our hearts. We're going to give up television this year for Lent, or chocolate, or drinking, or smoking, or swearing. But I'm not really sure that I'm here, at least this year. I'm not really sure that I'm here to motivate anybody. I'm not really sure that's my job, to harangue you, to make you feel guilty and say, this year, 2014, you've got to be a super Christian. And I'm not really altogether sure that this year I'm supposed to offer better techniques with guaranteed results that you can look back and say, ah, yes, 2014, that was the Lent when I did it all right. So the question is, What then are we doing here? If I'm not going to give you a motivational speech, if I'm not going to wind the spring a little bit tighter so that you can pop out like a jack in the box, what are we doing here? And what makes you and I different from the increasingly secular world outside these doors? Well, the world around you is all about freedom of choice. It's about meeting needs and desires, self-expression and finding oneself, including finding and choosing what you believe. And that's not what we're here to do, which is a very anti-American kind of thing to say. To say that you don't really have freedom of choice, that's not what we're here to celebrate. Instead, we're here to tell the story of God's people. We're here to tell the story of God's people. In the Exodus story, the point isn't that Moses and Miriam and all the Israelites had a choice. They didn't have a choice at all. The Egyptians were behind them. The Red Sea was in front of them. They were going to die. That was their choice. They had no choice whatsoever. They were either going to go into the sea and drown, or they were going to be set upon by the world's strongest army at that point. But then God enters into the story. God enters into the story, and with his strong breath, he blows the waters so that the Red Sea parts and that the Israelites are able to cross on dry ground, and they are able to get to the other side of the Red Sea. And when the Egyptians think that they can follow them and that they can chase them, the Lord stops the parting and the waters crash back in and destroy them. That's not a story about human possibility at all. It's all about 100% about what God does and how great God is and how we are called by God, and we have to figure out how to answer God's call. What makes us different tonight is that we are seeking to live out God's call. That's why we started tonight with confession. We moved to salvation. And then we talk, lastly, the last part of the service is going to be about commission. Because we each have a place to go. God alone can do salvation, but God calls us to answer that call. God wants us to answer that call by physical acts. Some call them disciplines, singing of hymns or prayers. But we are all seeking God. And the reason that these ashes are so important, this dust is so important, is because God is in the midst of all this complex stuff of life. And Christians, especially during Lent, must resist the very real temptation to say that we're just like everybody else. I'm just the same as my next door neighbor. It's just that I go to church and he doesn't. No, I don't think so. I'm not all that much like him. You see, I've got this... First of all, this weird smudge on my forehead that he doesn't have tonight. And I've spent the last 24 hours thinking, really thinking about and meditating on death. I don't think my next door neighbor has been spending the last 24 hours thinking about death. And I've read about God rescuing the Israelites from terrible slavery. And I think that's different from what the rest of the world does on a night like tonight. And I am here before you to put this proposition and lay it out for you. If God can do that for the Israelites, if God can rescue the Israelites, if he can do that for them back then what can he do for me? What can he do for us that we haven't imagined, that we haven't even dreamt of or thought of as possible? We are not like our next door neighbors because we believe in this great God who has done amazing, incredible things in the past and who has called us to do amazing and great and wonderful things in the present and into the future. We believe in a great God who has called us to do all sorts of crazy things in our lives. You and I have embarked upon a journey together to send your pastor to the Philippines, believing that we have something in common, some sort of bedrock commonality with some people who don't speak the same language, we've never met, we've communicated maybe a handful of times on Facebook and email, and I'm going to go over there into the tropics and imagine that I'm going to have some sort of relationship with these people. And they are going to have a relationship with me. And they're total strangers as of today. And the only thing we have in common is Christ. And you believe that God is calling you to more in life than just another season of spring training on ESPN or voting for the same old candidates or just another lunch at McDonald's. What sets us apart when we look for meaning and truth and calling is that God is in the person of Jesus Christ. And we reject that competition for our loyalties that so makes up our modern society. The question that we always ask people, are you a feminist or a liberal or a Republican or an evolutionist, a consumerist, an advocate? Are you pro-labor? Are you pro-business? As if you can just choose the best or the worst out of each one of these. None of them is the truth, capital T, because Jesus is the truth, capital T. Only Jesus Christ is the truth, capital T. And when we learn to answer Jesus' call in our lives, we witness to the truth of Jesus. When we try and answer what Jesus is calling us to do, we witness to the truth of Jesus. Now, that's a really pastoral sort of thing to say. That's a really preacherly thing to say because it doesn't mean anything really, does it? It's one of those things that it just doesn't, it rolls off the tongue kind of nice, but it doesn't have any application in modern life. But it is hard to answer Jesus' call because Jesus doesn't come right out and tell us what it is. I want you to know that every Thursday I go to the mail and I'm hoping in my mailbox there will be a letter from Jesus inside with my sermon on it, all typed up, and there wouldn't be any grammatical mistakes because it's from Jesus, and it would be perfect, and it would say, here's what I want you to say to that congregation this Sunday, Joseph, signed Jesus. That would be great. That would be perfect. But it never happens, right? And it's not just about the preachers either. It doesn't happen in any of our lives. You face a big choice. Should I move or should I not move? Where should I send my kids to school? What sort of investment should I make? What sort of relationship do I have with my spouse? And there's this continual struggle back and forth, and I don't care who you are, this struggle happens to you. Even if you're the most faithful person, if you have the simplest faith, faith the size of a mustard seed, we still struggle with doubts that we're doing or saying the right thing. We still have our doubts that we've gone into the right or wrong vocation. Some Sundays I come in here and there is an awe of unworthiness. Because I don't feel like I can tell you anything that you don't already know better than I do. And some Sundays I come here and there's an awe of, aw shucks, I really don't have much to say. So there's a lot of dust and ash and junk and garbage in the midst of truth that we have to sort through. And I've destroyed a good number of things in my day, and all that's left in my life of some things is just ash. Some of my friendships, some things dealing with my health, projects I've never finished, things that I've never gotten the chance to say, ideas that I had that just never got off the ground. So what makes us Christians different from the lady down the street or the person who lives next door is that rather than sweeping the dust under the rug and pretending it's not there, we wear it on our foreheads. One day a year. We wear it boldly on our foreheads one day a year. And rather than admit that we're all more or less the same, that I'm the same as the guy down the street because I go to church, or I'm the same as the guy down the street except that I go to church, rather than admit that, I think we have to admit as Christians that we're chasing, we're seeking, we're being formed by a God who loves us, a God who does remarkable and wonderful things. And it's a God that I will never fully understand because he does these remarkable things that defy explanation. And that God, that mystery, that Jesus became flesh, he comes into our lives and helps us sort out the ashes and the dust, the pearls of wisdom and the good news. And so we are thankful. Amen.